Zed smoothed back his wavy hair.
"Unless you wish to begin teaching the Nang Tong your beliefs, I would suggest we follow mine and remove ourselves from their hunting grounds."
Anne sighed.
"Perhaps you have a point or two. Your intentions, at least, were benevolent."
With a shooing motion, she signaled for him to get going. Zed followed the twisting gorge, trying to stay out of the sluggish ribbon of water running through it. The ravine led southwest. He knew that would take them away from the Nang Tong homeland. He hoped it would also conceal them while they fled. The Nang Tong had spears and arrows. When the moon came out between a break in the clouds, Zed put out a hand to stop Anne and squatted down to take a quick appraisal of the landscape while there was light enough for a moment. He saw little but the 8 to 10 foot high walls of the banks and, beyond, the nearly barren hills. There were scattered copses on distant hills. In the low valley ahead, the stream ran into a thicket of woods. Zed turned back to tell Anne that their best bet might be to hide in the brush and woods. The Nang Tong might be leery of a trap and stay out of such a place. The moon was still out. He saw behind them their perfect pair of tracks through the mud. He had forgotten that he couldn't hide their trail. He pointed so she would see them too. She gestured with a thumb, indicating that they should get out of the muddy gully. Twin, reed-thin screams in the distance cut through the stillness.
"The horses,"
he whispered. The screams silenced abruptly. Their throats had been cut.
"Bags! Those were good horses. Do you have anything with which to defend yourself?"
Anne flicked her wrist and brought forth a dakra.
"I have this. Its magic won't work, but I can still stab them. What do you have?"
Zed smiled fatalistically.
"My honeyed tongue."
"Maybe we should split up before your weapon gets me killed."
Zed shrugged.
"I wouldn't hold it against you if you wish to strike out alone. We have important business. Maybe it would be better if we split up to give a better chance of at least one of us making it."
She smiled.
"You just want me to miss out on all the fun. We'll get away. We're a goodly distance from the horses. Let's stay together."
Zed squeezed her shoulder.
"Maybe they only sacrifice virgins."
"But I don't want to die alone."
Zed chuckled softly as he moved on, searching for a place ahead where he could take them up and out of the ravine. He finally found a cut through the bank. Roots of gnarled bushes hung down like hair, providing handholds. The moon slid behind a thick cloud. In the inky darkness, they climbed slowly, blindly, feeling their way with their hands. Zed could hear a few bugs buzzing about and, in the distance, the mournful call of a coyote. Other than that, the night was still and silent. Hopefully, the Nang Tong would be busy picking through Zed and Anne's things back with the horses. Zed reached the top and turned to help pull Anne up.
"Stay on your hands and knees. We'll crawl, or at least crouch, as we go."
Anne whispered her agreement. She made her way atop the bank with him. They struck out away from the gully. The bright moon came out from behind the cloud. In a semicircle right in front of them, blocking their way, stood the Nang Tong. There were perhaps 20 of them. Zed reasoned that there were more about nearby. Nang Tong hunting parties were larger. They were not tall, and were nearly naked, wearing only a thong and a pouch of sorts that held their manhood. Necklaces made of human finger bones hung around their necks. Heads were shaved bald. They all had sinewy arms and legs and pronounced bellies. The Nang Tong had all smeared white ash over their entire body. The area around their eyes was painted black, giving them the appearance of living skulls. Zed and Anne peered up at spears, their barbed steel points glinting in the moonlight. One of the men chattered an order. Zed didn't understand the words, but he had a good idea of what it meant.
"Don't use the dakra,"
he whispered over to Anne.
"There's too many. They'll kill us on the spot. Our only chance is if we can stay alive and think of something."
He saw her slip the weapon back up her sleeve. Zed grinned up at the wall of grim faces.
"Would any of you men happen to know where we could find the Jacopo?"
A spear jabbed at him, then signaled them to stand. He and Anne reluctantly complied. The men, not up to Zed's shoulders, but about as tall as Anne, crowded in around them, suddenly jabbering all at once. Men pushed and poked at them. Their arms were pulled back and their wrists tightly bound.
"Remind me again," Anne said to him, "about the wisdom of leaving these heathens to their unenlightened practices."
"Well, I heard from a confessor once that they are quite good cooks. Perhaps we will sample something new and delightful."
Anne stumbled but caught herself as she was pushed on ahead.
"I'm too old," she muttered to the sky, "to be mucking about with a crazy man."
An hour of brisk marching brought them to the Nang Tong village. Broad, round tents, perhaps 30 of them, made up the mobile community. The low tents hunkered close to the ground, presenting the least possible purchase to the wind. Enclosures made of tall stick fences held a variety of livestock. Chattering people, wrapped head to toe in unadorned cloth to hide their identities from the sacrificial offerings about to take their prayers to the spirit world, turned out to watch Zed and Anne being prodded at spear point through the village. Their captors, covered in the white ash and with their eyes painted black, were hunters in the guise of the dead, so there would be no danger of their being recognized as one of the still living. Zed was jerked to a halt before a pen, while men undid the rope tie at the gate. The gate swung open in the moonlight. It seemed that the whole Nang Tong village had followed behind. They hooted and hollered as the two prisoners were hustled through the gate, apparently wanting to give messages to the two spirits about to go speak on the Nang Tong's behalf to their ancestors. Zed and Anne, their wrists still bound behind their backs, both fell when they were forcibly shoved into the pen. It was a muddy landing. Snorting shapes loped away. The pen was occupied by pigs. The way they had churned the ground into a quagmire, the village must have occupied this place for at least the past few months. It smelled like what it was. The spirit hunting party, nearly 50 as Zed had guessed, split up. Some went back to tents, surrounded by gleeful children and stoic women. Others of the hunters encircled the pen to stand guard. Most of the people who stood around watching were calling out to the prisoners, giving their messages for the spirit world.
"Why are you doing this?"
Zed called to their guards. He nodded his head and inclined it toward Anne.
"Why?"
He shrugged. One of the guards seemed to understand. He made a cutting gesture across his throat and then indicated the imaginary blood running from the pretend wound. With his spear, he pointed at the moon.
"Blood moon?"
Anne asked under her breath.
"Red moon," Zed whispered in realization. "The last I'd heard, the confessors had secured a pledge from the Nang Tong that they would no longer sacrifice people. I was never sure if they held to their promise. Just the same, people stayed away. The red moon must have frightened them, made them think the spirit world was angry. That's probably why we're to be sacrificed, to placate the angry spirits."
Anne squirmed uncomfortably in the mud beside him. She gave Zed a murderous look.
"I only pray that Nathan's situation is worse than ours."
"What was it you said?"
Zed asked absently.
"About mucking about with a crazy man."
Chapter 39.
"What do you think?"
Clarissa asked. She turned a little one way and then the other, trying to mimic a natural stance while feeling anything but natural. She wasn't sure what to do with her hands, so she clasped them behind her back. Nathan was lounging in a chair as splendid as any she had ever seen, its padded seat and back covered with striped tan and gold fabric. His left leg was draped casually over one of the chair's ornately carved arms as he slouched with his elbow propped on the chair's other arm. His chin rested thoughtfully in the heel of his hand. His swords finely crafted silver scabbard hung down so that its point touched the floor in front of the chair. Nathan smiled that smile he had that said he was sincerely pleased.
My dear, I think you look lovely.
Really? You're not just saying that? You really like it? I don't look silly.
He chuckled.
No, most definitely not silly. Ravishing, perhaps.
But I feel, I don't know, presumptuous. I've never even seen clothes so fine, much less tried them on.
He shrugged.
Then it's about time you did.
The dressmaker, a thin, neat man with only a wisp of long gray hair covering the bald expanse atop his head, returned through the curtained doorway. He gripped each end of the tape measure draped around his neck, seesawing it nervously back and forth.
Madame finds the dress acceptable?
Clarissa remembered how Nathan had instructed her to conduct herself. She smoothed the rich blue satin at her hips.
It's not the best fit.
The dressmaker's tongue darted out to wet his lips.
Well, madame, had I known you were to grace my shop, or if you had sent the measurements on ahead, I would certainly have made the appropriate alterations.
He glanced to Nathan. His tongue darted out again.
Be assured, madam, I can make any necessary minor adjustments.
The man bowed to Nathan.
My lord, what think you? I mean, if it were altered to suit you.
Nathan folded his arms as he studied Clarissa the way a sculptor studied a work in progress. He squinted as he considered, rolled his tongue around inside his cheek, and made little sounds in his throat as if unable to decide. The dressmaker twiddled with the end of his tape measure.
Like Madame says, it fits a little sloppily at the waist.
Sir, have no fear.
The dressmaker whisked around behind her, tugging sharply at the material.
See here, I have but to take a dart or two. Madame is graced with an exquisite figure. I rarely have ladies so fine a form, but I can have the dress altered in a matter of hours. I would be most honored to do the work this very night and have it delivered to you where would you be staying, my lord?
Nathan flicked a hand.
I've yet to seek accommodations. Any place you could recommend with confidence?
The dressmaker bowed again.
The Briar House would be the finest inn in Tanamura, my lord. If you wish, I'd gladly have my assistant run over there and make arrangements for you and... Madame.
Nathan straightened himself in the chair and fingered a gold coin from his pocket. He flipped the coin to the man, followed by a second and then a third.
Yes, thank you. That would be very kind of you.
Nathan frowned in thought and then tossed the man another gold coin.
It's late, but I'm sure you could convince them to keep their dining room open until we arrive. We've been on the road all day and could use a decent meal.
He shook a finger at the man.
Their best rooms, mind you. I'll not have them sticking me in some cramped little sty.
I assure you, my lord, the Briar House has no room that could remotely be considered a sty, even by one such as yourself. And how long shall I have my assistant tell them you will be staying at their establishment?
Nathan stroked the ruffles on the front of his shirt.
Until Emperor Jagang requires me, of course.
Of course, sir. And would you like the dress, my lord?
Nathan hooked a thumb in the little pocket in the front of his green vest, letting his hand hang.
It will have to do for common wear. What do you have that would be more elegant?
The dressmaker smiled and bowed.
Let me bring some others for your approval, and Madame can try on the ones you fancy.
Yes, Nathan said. Yes, that would be best. I'm a man of wide experience and refined taste. I'm used to better. Bring something to dazzle me.
Of course, my lord.
He bowed twice and rushed off. Clarissa grinned in wonder after the man had gone.
Nathan, this is the finest dress I've ever seen, and you wish him to show us something better?
Nathan lifted an eyebrow.
Nothing is too good for a concubine to the emperor. The woman carrying the emperor's child.
Her heart fluttered to hear the prophet say that again. Sometimes, when she looked into his azure eyes, she almost saw something there, almost had the vaguest impression, if only for an instant, that Nathan was quite beyond mad. But when that serene smile of his came to his face, she melted in his confidence. He was more daring than any man she had ever met. His daring had saved her from the brutes back in Renwald. Since then, his daring had saved them in circumstances that to her seemed worse than hopeless. There had to be a grain of madness in daring that far beyond bold.
"Nathan, I trust in you and will do whatever you ask of me, but please, would you tell me if this is just a story to pass us here, or do you really see such a horrid thing for my future?"
Nathan brought his leg down and rose to his full, towering height. He lifted one of her hands, bringing it to his heart as if it were the most fragile of blossoms. His long, silver hair slipped over the front of his shoulder as he stood ever so close to her and looked into her eyes.
"Clarissa, it is just a tale to accomplish my goals. It in no way reflects anything I see about the future. I won't lie to you and tell you that there are not dangers ahead, but be at ease for now, and enjoy this much of it. We must wait for a while, and I wanted you to have an enjoyable time of it. You are pledged to do what you must, I trust in your word. In the meantime, I wanted nothing more than to do you a simple kindness."
"But shouldn't we hide where people won't know of us? Somewhere alone and out of sight?"
"That is the way criminals or unskilled runaways would hide. That's why they get caught. It makes people suspicious. If anyone is hunting them, they look in all the dark holes, never thinking to look in the light. As long as we must hide, the best place to hide is in the open. The story is too preposterous for people not to believe in its truth. No one would ever consider that anybody would have the audacity to invent such a tale, and so no one will question it. Besides, we aren't really hiding. No one is hunting us. We simply don't want to make people suspicious. Hiding would make them so."
She shook her head.
"Nathan, you are a marvel."
Clarissa eyed the bodice of the beautiful dress, what she could see of it, anyway, beyond the exposed flesh of her breasts, which were pushed up so high that they nearly tumbled out. She tugged at the bone stays lying against her ribs under her bosom. She had never worn such strange and uncomfortable undergarments. She couldn't imagine why they were all required. She smoothed the silken skirt of the dress.
"Does it look good on me? I mean, honestly. Tell me the truth, Nathan. I'm just a plain woman. Doesn't it look silly on a plain woman?"
Nathan's eyebrow arched.
"Plain? Is that what you think?"
"Of course, I'm no fool. I know I'm not."
Nathan waved her to silence.
"Maybe you should have a look for yourself."
He pulled the sheet off the standing mirror. This was a showing room for gentlemen. When he had instructed her on matters of decorum and propriety, he had told her that the mirrors in such a place were rarely used, and she wasn't to look in one unless asked. It was the look in the gentleman's eyes that mattered in such an exclusive shop, not the look in the mirror. Nathan gently took her elbow and walked her before the mirror.
"Forget what you see in your mind, and look at what others see when they look at you."
Clarissa's fingers fidgeted over the bunched frills at her waist. She nodded at Nathan, but feared to look in the mirror and be disappointed by what she always saw when she looked at herself. He gestured again. Wincing just a little out of embarrassment, she turned to gaze at her reflection. Her jaw dropped at what she saw.
Clarissa didn't recognize herself. She was not this young-looking.
A woman, not a young, fickle woman, but a woman in the full glory of her maturity, a woman of elegance and bearing, stared back.
"Nathan,"
she whispered,
my hair wasn't this long. How did the woman who worked on it this afternoon make it longer?"
"Ah, well, she didn't. I used some magic to do it. I thought it would look better if it was just a bit longer. You don't object, I pray?"
"No,"
she whispered.
"It's lovely."
Her soft brown hair was done in ringlets with delicate violet ribbons tied into them. She moved her head. The ringlets sprang up and down and swayed side to side. Clarissa had once seen a woman of standing come to Renwald, and she had hair like this. It was the most beautiful hair Clarissa had ever seen. Now, Orissa's hair looked just like that. She stared at herself in the mirror. Her shape was so shapely. All those hard, tight things under her dress had somehow rearranged her figure. Clarissa's face blushed to see her bosom straining up the way it did, half exposed for all to see. She had always known, of course, that women like Manda Perlin weren't really shaped as they appeared. She knew that when they had their clothes off, their shapes were not a great deal different from any other woman's, but Clarissa had never known just how much of it was due to the dresses those attractive women wore. In the mirror, in this dress, with her hair done in such a fashion and with the paint on her face, she looked the equal of any of them. Perhaps older, but that age seemed only to add bearing to what she saw, not a spent, unattractive quality, as she had always thought. And then she saw the ring in her lip. It was gold, not silver.
"Nathan,"
she whispered,
"what happened to the ring?"
"Oh, that. Well, it wouldn't do to have you supposedly a concubine to the emperor himself and carrying his little emperor heir and have a silver ring through your lip. Everyone knows that the emperor only brings those with gold rings to his bed. Besides, you were wrongly marked with a silver ring. It should have been gold from the beginning. Those men were just plain blind." He gestured in a grand fashion. "I, of course, am a man of vision." He held his hand out toward the mirror. "Look for yourself. That woman is too beautiful to wear anything but a gold ring." In the mirror, the woman staring back was getting tears in her eyes. Clarissa wiped a finger across her lower lids. She feared to ruin the paint the woman had put on her face when her hair was being curled.
"Nathan, I don't know what to say. You have done magic. You have made a plain woman into something
beautiful," he finished.
"But why?"
His face screwed up with an odd expression.
"Are you daft? I couldn't very well have you looking plain."
He swept a hand down, indicating himself.
"No one would believe a man as dashing as myself would be seen with a woman any less stunning."
Clarissa grinned. He didn't look so old to her as he had seemed when she had first met him. He really did look dashing. Dashing and distinguished.
"Thank you, Nathan, for having faith in me, in more ways than one."
"It's not faith. It's vision for what others are too blind to see. Now they do."
She glanced to the curtain where the dressmaker had disappeared.
"But this is also very expensive.
This dress alone would cost me near to a year's wages. And all the other things, the lodging, the coaches, the hats, the shoes, the women who did my hair and face, it all cost so much. You are spending money like a prince on holiday. How can you possibly afford it?" The sly smile oozed back onto his face.
"I'm good at making money. I could never spend all I can make."
"Don't be concerned about it. It means little to me."
"Oh."
She glanced back at the mirror.
"Of course."
He cleared his throat.
"What I mean is that you are more important than petty matters of gold. People are more important than such considerations. If it was my last copper, I would have spent it with no less enthusiasm or greater worry."
When the dressmaker finally returned with a selection of stunning dresses, Nathan chose a number for her to try on. Clarissa went into the dressing room with each, and with the aid of the dressmaker's woman, tried on each. Clarissa didn't think she would have been able to lace, tie, and button any of them by herself. Nathan smiled at each dress she came out in and told the dressmaker he would buy it. By the end of the next hour, Nathan had selected a half dozen dresses and had passed a handful of gold to the dressmaker. In all her life, she had never imagined a place of such wealth that dresses were already made. It was another measure of how much her life had changed with Nathan. Only the very rich or royalty would buy dresses this way.
"I will make the necessary alterations, my lord, and have the dresses delivered to the Briar House."
He darted a look at Clarissa.
"Perhaps my lord would wish me to leave several of them loose-fitting to accommodate madam when she grows with our emperor's child?"
Nathan waved a hand dismissively.
No, I enjoy having her look her best. I would have a seamstress let them out when necessary, or simply purchase others to fit her then.
It suddenly embarrassed Clarissa to realize that this dressmaker thought that she was concubine not only to the Emperor, but to Nathan. The ring through her lip, gold though it was, still meant she was nothing more than a slave. A slave would mean little to the Emperor, with child or not, gold ring or not. Nathan boldly told people that he was Emperor Jagang's plenipotentiary, which kept them furiously bowing and scraping. Clarissa was merely property, shared with the Emperor's trusted agent. The dressmaker's sidelong glance finally struck home. She was a whore in his eyes. Maybe a whore in a fine dress, and maybe not a whore by choice, but a whore nonetheless. A whore who was enjoying herself, being dressed in fine clothes and kept by an important man at the finest inn in the city. The fact that Nathan didn't think the same thing was all that kept her from running from the dress shop in humiliation. Clarissa reproached herself. This was the pretense Nathan had crafted for them, to keep them safe. It kept the soldiers they encountered at every turn from hauling her away to a tent. Deprecating glances were a small thing indeed for her to bear in return for all that Nathan had done for her and for the respect he always showed her. It was what Nathan thought that mattered. Besides, she was used to disapproving looks, looks of sympathy at best, scorn at worst. People had never looked upon her with favor. Let these people think what they would. She knew she was doing something worthwhile for a man of worth. Clarissa lifted her chin as she strutted to the door. The dressmaker bowed again as they stepped out into the dark street to the waiting carriage.
Thank you, Lord Rawl. Thank you for allowing me to serve the Emperor in my small way. The dresses will be delivered before morning, you have my word.
Nathan waved an offhanded dismissal to the man. In the dim dining room of the elegant Briar House, Clarissa sat across a small table from Nathan. She now noticed the surreptitious glances she got from the staff. She sat up straighter and put her shoulders back, defying them to have a good look at her bosom. She reasoned that in the murky candlelight and under all the face paint, they wouldn't be able to see her face reddening. The wine warmed her, and the roasted duck finally sated her gnawing hunger. People kept bringing food. Fowl and pork and beef, along with gravies and sauces and a variety of side dishes. She nibbled at a few, not wanting to appear a glutton, and afterward she was satisfied. Nathan ate with zeal, but didn't overeat. He enjoyed the different dishes, wanting to try them all. The staff hovered around him, slicing meat, pouring sauces, and moving plates and platters around as if he were helpless. He encouraged them, asking for things, sending others away, and in general made himself appear an important man in their midst. She guessed that he was. He was the Emperor's plenipotentiary, a man not to be crossed. No one wanted Lord Rawl to be anything but most pleased. If his pleasure required seeing to Clarissa's desires, they did that, too. Clarissa was relieved when they were finally shown to their rooms, and Nathan had at last closed the door. She sagged, at last unburdened of the responsibility of acting a fine lady, or a fine whore. She wasn't exactly sure how to play the part. She did know that she was glad to be away from the eyes that played over her. Nathan strode around the two rooms, inspecting the painted walls with gold molding applied to form huge, sweeping panels with reverse curved corners. Rich carpets in deep colors covered nearly every inch of floor. Everywhere there were couches and chairs. One room had several tables, one for taking meals there, another with a slant top for writing. The writing table held neatly arranged sheets of paper, silver pens, and gold-topped ink bottles with various colors of ink. In the other room was the bed. Clarissa had never seen a bed like it. Four elaborately turned posts held up a canopy of lace and rich red fabric with gold designs splashed boldly over it. The bed cover matched. It was a huge bed. She had trouble imagining why such an expanse of bed was needed.
"Well,"
Nathan said as he strolled back into the room with the bed,
"I guess it will have to do."
Clarissa giggled.
"Nathan, a king would be delighted to sleep in such a room."
Nathan's expression contorted in a casual manner.
"Perhaps, but I am more than a king. I am a prophet."
Her smile faded as her mood turned earnest.
"Yes, you really are more than a king."
Nathan went around the room, blowing out most of the dozen lamps. He left the one beside the bed and the one on the dressing stand. He half-turned and gestured to the other room.
"I'll sleep on a couch in there. You may have the bed."
"I'll take the couch. I wouldn't be comfortable in such a bed. I'm a simple woman, not accustomed to such grand things. You are. You should have the bed."
Nathan cupped her cheek.
"Get used to them. Take the bed. It would be uncomfortable for me, knowing that such a lovely lady was sleeping on a couch. I'm a man of the world, and such things don't faze me."
He bowed grandly from the doorway.
"Sleep well, my dear."
He paused with the door half closed.
"Clarissa, I apologize for the looks you had to endure, and for what people might have thought of you because of my story." He truly was a gentleman. "No apology necessary. It was rather fun pretending, as if I were in a play on a stage."
He laughed with that sparkle in his blue eyes as he flung his cape around himself.
"It was fun, wasn't it? Having those people think we were other than we were."
"Thank you for everything, Nathan. You made me feel pretty today."
"You are pretty." She smiled.
"That was just the clothes. Beauty comes from within."
He winked.
"Sleep well, Clarissa. I've left a protective shield on the door so no one can enter. Be at ease here. You will be safe."
He closed the door gently. Feeling a warm glow from the wine, Clarissa ambled about the room, inspecting all the fine things. She ran her fingers over the inlaid silver on the small tables beside the bed. She touched the cut glass on the lamps. She ran her hand over the finely woven bed covers when she turned them down. Standing in front of the dressing table, she looked at herself in the mirror as she unlaced the bodice of her dress. She almost hated to take off the dress and be just herself again, although she wouldn't be unhappy about being free of the bone stays that confined her. With the laces loose, she was at last able to take a full breath. She slipped the top of the dress off her shoulders. The things still pressing from underneath held the dress up over her bosom. She sat on the edge of the bed as she tried to reach the buttons up the back. Some of them were too high. Sagging in frustration, she settled on removing her new shoes made of supple, napped leather. She rolled off her stockings and wiggled her toes, glad to have them free. Clarissa thought about home. She remembered her cozy bed, little as it was. She missed home, not because she was so happy there, but simply because it was home and all she knew. As fancy as this place was, it felt cold to her. Cold and frightening. She was someplace she didn't know, and she could never go home again. Suddenly, Clarissa was very lonely. With Nathan, she felt the comfort of his confidence. He always knew where he was going, what to do, and what to say. He never seemed to have any doubts. Clarissa was full of them now that she was alone in the bedroom. It was odd, but she missed Nathan more than home. And he was right in the next room. Nathan was almost her home now. The carpet felt good under her bare feet as she went to the door. Gently, she rapped against the white panel in the center of the gold molding. She waited a moment, and then knocked again.
"Nathan?"
she called softly. She knocked and called his name once more. When still no answer came, she cracked the door open and peeked in. Only a single candle cut the still gloom. Nathan was in one of his trances again. He was sitting in a chair, staring blankly at nothing. Clarissa stood at the door for a time, watching his steady breathing. She had been frightened the first time she found him stiff and unblinking, but he had assured her that it was something he had done nearly his whole life. He hadn't gotten angry that first time when she shook him, thinking there was something wrong. Nathan never got angry with her. He always treated her with respect and kindness, two things she had always longed for, but had never gotten from her own people, and here was a stranger who gave them without effort. Clarissa called his name again. Nathan blinked and looked up at her. "Is everything all right?" he said.
"Yes. I hope I'm not disturbing you in your reflection."
Nathan waved away her concern. "No, no."
"Well, I was wondering, could you help me undo my dress? I can't reach the buttons in the back, and I seem to be stuck in it. I didn't want to lie down in it and ruin it."
Nathan followed her back into the bedroom. She had blown out the lamp on the dressing table so that she wouldn't be embarrassed. Only the one beside the bed allowed him to see what he was doing. With both hands, Clarissa held her hair up out of the way as his strong fingers worked their way down the buttons. It felt good to have him near.
"Nathan,"
she whispered when he had reached the last of them at her waist. He made a questioning sound in response. She feared he would ask what the thumping sound was, and she would have to tell him that it was her heart. Clarissa turned, having to hold the dress over her breasts now that it was undone.
"Nathan,"
she said, as she gathered her courage and looked up into his beautiful eyes.
"Nathan, I'm lonely."
His brow drew together as he gently laid one of his big hands on her bare shoulder.
"No need, my dear. I'm right in the next room." "I know. But I mean that I'm lonely in a bigger way than that. I mean I'm lonely for the way you... I don't know how to say it. When I'm alone, I start thinking about what I will have to do to help those people you talked about, and all kinds of fearful things come into my head. And before I know it, I'm sweating in a terror."
"It's often more worrisome to ponder something than it is to actually do it.
Just don't think about it.
Try to enjoy the big bed and the fine room if you can. Who knows? One day we may have to sleep in a ditch." She nodded. She had to look away from his eyes, lest she lose her courage.
"Nathan, I know I'm a plain woman, but you make me feel special. No man ever made me feel pretty, feel desirable."
"Well, as I said before..." She reached up and put her fingers to his lips to silence him.
"Nathan, I really..."
She looked up into his wonderful eyes. She swallowed and changed what she was going to say.
"Nathan, I'm afraid you are just too dashing a man for me to resist. Will you come spend the night in this big bed with me?"
He smiled with one side of his mouth as she took her fingers away. "Dashing," she nodded.
"Very."
She could feel the curls springing. He rested his arms around her waist. It made her heart beat even faster.
"Clarissa, you owe me nothing. I saved you from what was happening in Renwald, but you in return have promised to help me. You owe me nothing beyond that." "I know. It's not..."
She wasn't making herself clear, she knew. She stretched up on her tiptoes, her arms circling his neck, and pressed her lips to his. His arms drew her tight. She abandoned herself in those arms and to those lips. He pulled back.
"Clarissa, I'm old. You're a young woman. You don't want someone who's as old as I."
How long had she hurt because she thought she was too old to have someone? How often had she felt forlorn because she was too old? And now, this man, this wonderful, vibrant, handsome man, was telling her she was too young?
"Nathan, what I want is to be thrown on the bed, to have this fancy, expensive dress pulled off me, and for you to have your way with me until I hear the spirits sing."
In the silence, Nathan stared at her. At last, he reached down, put an arm behind her legs, and swept her off her feet. He carried her to the bed, but instead of throwing her onto it, as she had suggested, he set her down, gently. His weight sank into the bed as he reclined beside her. His fingers stroked her forehead. They looked into each other's eyes. Tenderly, he kissed her. Since her dress was all untied and unbuttoned, it easily slipped down to her waist. She ran her fingers through his long silver hair as she watched him lovingly kiss her breasts. His lips were warm against her. For some reason she found that surprising and marvelous. A soft moan escaped her throat at the feeling of her nipples being kissed in such a manly, passionate fashion. Nathan may have lived longer than she, but he was not an old man in her eyes. He was dashing, daring, and thoughtful, and he made her feel beautiful. She found herself panting at the sight of him without his clothes. No man had ever touched her with such tender purpose, and the sureness of that touch further heated her passion. His kisses trailed down the front of her, each making her gasp to catch her breath in sweet, startled desire. When he at last took his place atop her, she totally and unashamedly succumbed to her need. She felt cradled not only in the canopy bed, but in his ardent embrace. At long last, as her whole body stiffened with her cry of release, she could hear the spirits sing.
This is the end of side two. You should now change the balance control to the full right position and listen to side one again. This time.